real-time check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
And welcome to Monday afternoon, everyone. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch as we sit high atop the Chicago River in the Allstate Skyline Studio on this Monday afternoon. Jim Dahlke and Catherine Davis are in the studio. Of course, you know them from Chicago Inno and from the Inno Minute that plays every morning on the opening bell with Steve Grzanich. And they're with me on most Mondays. Welcome back, both of you.
Hi, Steve.
Hey, Steve.
Okay, so how old are kids when they tend to join their first social media network?
Great question.
12.
Yeah, I was going to say probably middle school.
12 and a half is the number. By 12 and a half, 56% of 12 and a half year olds are in some sort of social media.
Well, what do you think about that?
I don't know. Randy Schaefer from the Chicago Tribune will be along to talk about it later, because on the one hand, it's bad. It's bad. But then there are studies out saying that kids who spend more time on social media sites than TV actually develop in a better way. So we'll kick that around. But that's not why you guys are here. We are now close enough. Well, you've always walked here for your sessions, but we're even closer now. No need for a car sharing service. Mm-hmm. There's a new one, which seems to be a pretty big company around the world, coming to Chicago. Right, Catherine?
Yeah. Car2Go, they're launching in Chicago next month. And what they do is offer, an on-demand car service. So if you need to get a car for a quick trip out to IKEA to pick up some furniture, this could really come in handy.
And what are the benefits they have that others don't have?
Yeah, so they don't have any annual or monthly fees. Zipcar has a monthly fee, so that can kind of get expensive, especially if you're not using the car every month, And then also, it only costs 29 cents per minute to rent one of their two-seater smart cars.
39 cents for a Mercedes.
Right. Yep, 39 cents for a Mercedes
okay,
model.
Who's going to do the math? I'm not going to do the math.
I know, I'm not going to do the math.
If it was
either.
An hour, how long would it take us to have a Mercedes?
I think for 29, it's like $7 or something, so okay. An hour. So, yeah. Well, we'll see. I mean, so basically, this is a really interesting.
See how quickly he got around that math.
Yeah, blah, blah, blah. So, what's interesting about this to me is that we're really seeing this kind of fill an interesting gap in this sort of whole phenomenon about not having a car, right? So you can Uber, make a quick trip there. If you need to go to IKEA, right, you need something to kind of haul. This kind of fills in a gap for people who really want to go carless.
We talked last week about how property values could change because people will now have one car garages instead of two. And, the space for that second car will now be livable space in homes once we fully get to driverless cars and things like that. This I see as a sign toward that, right? There's less and less of a reason to have a car at all.
Well, imagine a service like this where it's a fleet of driverless cars, right? So you're hopping in a car that's just parked on the street. And the nice thing about this service, too, is that you don't have to return it to some, rental car lot, right? Basically, these are cars you're seeing that are parked on the street. You get in it, you drive around, and you come back, and you drop it at one of their pre-designated spots.
So it's, in a way, it's not a dockless bike situation, but it's kind of close, right?
It is definitely similar, and the parking fees are all included, too, so you don't have to worry about a meter or anything like that if you see a
permits,
space.
Permits,
exactly.
Right.
All insurance, all included within the price.
Is it Brendan Riley, who's the alderman in Lakeview, who's opposed to this?
Yeah, because Lakeview is already such a congested area, and there's so much free street parking that, people are constantly competing to get spaces for. So I think, just based on that, they're like, let's not let this operate here right now.
Forward thinking or backward thinking?
Well, I think this is forward thinking.
No, I mean the alderman's opposition.
Right. No, backward thinking from the alderman's perspective. I think that this has got a real opportunity to, like I said, fill a gap for a lot of commuters, a lot of people who are trying to get around town. And I think this is something that cities should be welcoming of.
Okay. So, we just got back from a vacation to Denmark and Norway. And I was lucky enough to bring my kids on this trip. My kids are 22 and 20. And they're both kind of dog fiends. And, I love my dog. I really do. I don't understand. I'm not a big dog person. So they were starting to bug me because every time they'd see a dog on the street, they both would get in that, oh, look at that. I'm like, come on, get over it, right? And then here comes Dig Dates, which is coming to Chicago, which my kids would be all over. I love this idea, I guess. Tell me about Dig Dates, Catherine.
Yeah, so it's a dating app service similar to Tinder or Bumble, but for dog lovers and people that own dogs. So basically, you can filter through, if you're looking.
So you're not trying to find a mate for your dog.
No, you're trying to find
a mate
who also loves dogs.
I got you. Okay.
So it's interesting because you can search by, a ton of different things. So you can be like, I want to date someone who already owns a dog. Or you can be like, I have a dog, so I want to find someone that wants to like my dog. Or you can even be like, I want to find someone, neither of us have a dog, but we're going to adopt a dog later once we're in a relationship.
So it's like... It's like the LGBTQ sort of choices. You've got all these different choices for relationship types.
But think about that again. I want to find somebody who would like to own a dog with me. Like, oh boy, commitment there, right?
right.
I would, let's invest in a 15-year relationship with a dog.
Well, yeah. They used to say the best way for a guy to meet girls is to walk around Lincoln Park or wherever with the dog, right?
But think about how much more likely you are to get the swipe on your match if you have a cute pup in the picture, right?
I guess so. But, I mean, are people who don't have dogs going to really go to this site to pick a girl with a dog or a guy with a... That's what they're banking on, right?
Well, I think they're
this
banking on...
This isn't a Brady Bunch thing where two dogs have to get together, right?
Well, what they do is they have dog-friendly date ideas, too. So once you swipe with somebody, you guys can get some advice or some suggestions on things you guys can do with your pups. So I think what they're trying to do with this is, you know, let super, you know, dog lovers connect with other folks that are really into their pups.
Okay, it's called Dig Dates, and is it up and running now?
Yep, they launched in Chicago this weekend. And, you know, one thing I wanted to add is that I do think that this will be helpful because I've known people who've broken up over a dog.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? So you meet some guy or girl at a singles bar or at a bar at an event, and then everything's good until the dog gets involved?
Yeah, or it's time to move in with each other and someone has a dog and they don't want to live with it.
One's got to go, and it's usually not the dog.
Or allergy concerns, too, is another thing, right? So, I mean, that would certainly...
That's way too
to
practical.
Yeah.
No, that's not it at all.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Bertrand, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
Tim Dahlke is here, so is Catherine Davis. They both write for Chicago Inno. You should check them out. Check out their daily newsletter as well called The Beat.
The Beat, that's right.
How do people find that, Jim?
They can check us out at ChicagoInno.com, and from there you can sign up for our daily newsletter, which is The Beat, which is where we're kind of talking about the things we talk about here every Monday, but we do that every day in our email.
It's entertaining, but it's not as entertaining as it is here.
Oh, what could be more entertaining than this?
Almost nothing at all. Catherine wrote a story about this startup, this company called LiveBeat, which started with a young man who lost his child right in utero. Mm-hmm. The baby died, and they weren't monitoring the heartbeat, and so he decided to come up with a way to keep track of that. Tell me about this LiveBeat.
Yeah, so LiveBeat, they make a wearable device for pregnant women that allows them to continuously monitor their fetus's heartbeat. So it's like a belt-like device. It kind of fits around, you know, your pregnant belly like
right.
a belt. And it has smart sensors built into it that can pick up fetal heart rates and transfer that data to a smartphone app where parents can monitor.
So I don't know if you did much reporting into the need for this. Obviously, the tremendous sadness here. But when I first read it, I thought, oh, my God, this is another thing for prospective parents to stress over and to worry about, you know, because there's a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are constantly looking at your baby's heartbeat, it could become a pretty unhealthy obsession.
Yeah. Well, you know, what's interesting about this device is they're making two versions. So there's going to be a medical device version, which is going to be FDA approved. And based on what the founder told me, that will be prescribed to people who are already, you know, at a higher risk of having an issue like this. So it isn't necessarily for everyone. There will be a consumer version that, you know, you can get just for peace of mind. But I think generally this will be for higher risk patients.
Exactly. If you have a kind of your condition that is likely to have, you know, a heart issue, it's a good thing to monitor. But I think you're exactly right that maybe this isn't necessarily for every consumer out
right.
there because it's going to be just an extra level of worry.
Is there nothing like this available now?
No. So the only thing that's really available are like Doppler-based, like ultrasound-based
okay.
ways to monitor that. And so it's not very accurate because, you know, of course, the average mom doesn't know exactly where her baby's heart is and how to get an accurate reading.
So it's called LiveBeat, and it's will be for sale on Amazon coming up this summer?
Yep, that's what he expects, the consumer version.
$199. Okay, very good. We'll follow that. Tell me about this company that was founded by Tom Alexander. He used to work for Rahm Emanuel, right? Mm-hmm. Tom Alexander.
That's right, yeah. Tom Alexander, he was in the comms shop for the mayor and spent a couple years or about 4 years at 1871 as the COO, working closely with Howard Tolman there. So last couple months, he has left 1871 and now he's on to his new startup called Holistic. And it's kind of taking a data-driven approach at measuring company culture. So what they do is they produce one thing, a score, which is they kind of call like a credit score for employee happiness, right, to kind of measure a range of different things about how compensated your employees are, how their benefits are, is your workplace diverse and inclusive. So they kind of take this huge look at a company culture and then provide kind of a report on different ways that a company can improve it.
I was thinking Glassdoor, but Glassdoor is for people outside to look in, right? Is this something, say you're looking for a job, you could go to Holistic and see how a company scores?
So this is really all internal. So okay, this is where
so a company would hire
a
them.
Company says, you know, hey, we want to see our employees happy, and if there aren't, or if there's ways we can improve, how can we do it? So they act as a consultant, come in, take a lot of data from everything from benefits information to salary, and then they take surveys with all the employees and measure hundreds of different factors.
Credit score for happiness.
That's right.
Are they up and running?
They are. So they're beta testing it with a couple of companies in Chicago right now, and so they're going to continue to roll it out.
Because Tom Gimbel is here on Friday, and he talked about the job market, and it's like he's never seen before. It's just hot, and companies are trying to find a way to recruit and keep employees, and this probably would be a nice tool for that.
100%. I mean, every company right now, especially tech companies, I mean, this work is very in demand. Everybody wants to have a fun work environment and an inclusive work environment and a place where your employees feel happy, right? So this is going to make sure that your company has a good working knowledge of how happy your employees
are.
Okay,
I know this story broke last week, but let's just talk briefly about what happened at Outcome Health, because it just remains one of the most remarkable tech stories in the city, I think.
Yeah, that's right. So Outcome Health's co-founders are out. So they had stepped down from the company back in January from their day-to-day roles, but
they
remained on the board.
This giant monster, right? This great steamrolling company.
Rishi Shah and Shraddha Agarwal were the founders of the company, about 10-year-old business, and stepped down after the fraud allegations, and their investors sued them over fraud for misleading advertising metrics. And so now they just last week announced that they are now off the board completely.
So are they out of the company completely?
Out of the company, that's right. So yeah, they have no relationship with the company now, and so really it's, you know, kind of the next interesting twist.
Rishi was like in magazine spreads, right, for this up and coming businessman. We're seeing his house, we're seeing all, I think there's a picture of him in the pool, as I recall.
It's a really shocking turn of events, right, as we've gone from, you know, the most high profile startup in Chicago to kind of this the scene where now the founders are out.
Wow.
Completely.
That's too bad. It's too bad it all happened, I guess. Jim Dahlke, Catherine Davis, both from Chicago Window, thanks for coming by.
Thanks, Steve.
Now, your noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
And good afternoon. Thanks very much for tuning in to the Wintrust Business Lunch. We are joining you from the Allstate Skyline Studio, high above the Chicago River, on this beautiful summer afternoon in the city of Chicago. Jay Goltz is on a phone line. He is the CEO of the Goltz Group. And I was talking about your business over the weekend. It's really an odd coincidence. I didn't know you were going to be with us today. Welcome to the Biz Lunch.
Great to be here.
Well, I'm glad you're here. I also think we used to be neighbors in one way or another, which we've never met, but I think we used to live not too far from each other. Tell me about, let me just put it this way. My son is taking classes at IO, at the Improv Olympics, which is on Kingsbury now. And so I was trying to explain to him Clybourne Avenue, because he stops at the Whole Foods there. And I said, you know, back in the day, and I'm not kidding, Jay, we had this conversation Saturday. I remember going to the artist frame service because I went to the first ever Chicago Blues Festival in the city, which would have been probably 1985 or 86, and I wanted to get that poster framed. I went to the Artist Frame Center and still have it in my basement. And when I went there at the time on Clybourne, you guys were about the only show in town.
Well, in fact, we were the only place. I moved in here. I graduated college in 1978 and decided I wanted to go into business, which my father had a dime store in Armitage for those of us remember what a dime store looked like. So I was familiar with the neighborhood, and Clybourne was an abandoned factory district. My rent was $200 a square foot, $200 a month, which is less than a dollar a square foot for what I had. And up and down the street, there were pretty much empty businesses, old factories that were slowly, you know, going out of business. In Clybourne, back then, people used to drag race on it at night because it has no cross streets.
I was going to say, it used to be a shortcut. That's what Clybourne was. You'd go over to it when you wanted to get to the Kennedy or somewhere quickly.
Right. So I opened up on the third floor walk-up loft because it was cheap, and I quickly grew, and I went from the third floor to the second floor to the first floor. I took over the whole building eventually, and probably within 5 years, Artists Frame Service became the largest framing place in the country,
wow.
Much to my surprise and everyone else's.
So what followed then? Was it Goose Island was shortly after that? Goose Island was
The first, I would say, I remember the first big news was Treasure Island's moving on Clybourne, and that was big news. And then, you know, Crate and Barrel opened up. I mean, the joke is when I opened, people would say, "You're on Clybourne? Like, are you out of your mind?"
Right.
And now it's, "Oh, you're on Clybourne."
Well, and so tell me that. Did you pick that place with great forethought? That because I had to imagine when you started, you were getting no, you know, pass-by, walk-by traffic, unlike now. So did you find that spot because you knew it was going to grow, or just because the rent was so cheap and you knew your customers would come to you anyway?
There wasn't really walk by. There was run by, and if somebody was running by, they probably had your TV set on their shoulder.
Right,
so,
right.
I would say I can't. I went from I became a visionary by accident. I knew it was on the edge of Lincoln Park. The rent was really cheap, and frankly, what drove it was back in 1978. You were supposed to go to law school or medical school or become an accountant or whatever, and the word entrepreneur wasn't really used. And if it was a slam. It was like, oh, a real entrepreneur, like you're selling watches up your sleeve.
Right.
This was the 80s is where the whole entrepreneurship train took off. So I was nervous about it, and I knew that I could get out of the lease, and it was cheap. So first and foremost, it was because it was on the edge of Lincoln Park, and secondly, I knew the rent was cheap, but I can't tell you that I envisioned it would turn into what it's turned into.
You know,
and
You touch on something, though, that's important, and I talk to a lot of younger entrepreneurs now and explain that, you know, back in the day, in your day, you had to create a storefront. I mean, it has changed so much now in the way you can take a product to market or grow a business. But I know you still are pretty active in speaking to business groups and into advising young business people. So what do you tell them far as how much it's changed and what they should do now?
Well, here's the thing. I wrote a book called The Street Smart Entrepreneur about 20 years ago, 133 hard-learned lessons, because I realized I have a business degree, but they didn't teach 90% of what you need to know in business school. And the irony is, so now, flash forward 40 years, the irony is there's a million classes, there's degrees you can get in college. Back in the day, they didn't have any entrepreneurship, anything. So you've got classes, you've got books, you've got seminars. The failure rate for entrepreneurship used to be probably about 70%. And now, because of all of these classes and all the support, the failure rate for entrepreneurship is about 70%, which begs the question, why hasn't it gotten any better? And the answer is, because this is complicated. And it requires management, marketing, and finance. And most people are gifted at one, they want to go into, but they're really good at one of them, maybe even gifted. They're good at the second one, and they throw up their hands on the third. Oh, I'm not good with that. Well, you can't be two out of three and stay in business. So I tell people, if you this whole notion of just follow your passion and the money will follow, that's really reckless. That's reckless. You should follow your passion for sure, but the math has to work.
Well,
and there's lots of people that go into business and fail because the math doesn't work.
All right, so the Goltz Group is made up of what, four or five different companies?
Four companies.
They
it's
all have
Artists
to do...
Frame Service, yeah, Jason Holm.
And the what's the molding one? The Bella Molding.
Bella Molding. I sell wholesale across the country,
okay.
And Chicago Art Source.
Well, so what
art.
I'm getting at, though, in the time we just have about 30 seconds left, is that your calling? Is it selling that sort of art service, or are you a businessman who found something to sell? You get my question?
No, I would say, sure, I would say these are all connected by design. I'm a third-generation retailer. I like to take care of customers, and we like to sell better, more creative, more interesting things, and all of those businesses revolve around that. So they are connected, but I am a business person that's in those businesses.
Jay Goltz, the CEO of Goltz Group. Listen, it was great to talk to you. I hope we can do it again.
Sure, great.
And by the way, my poster still looks great. It's been almost 30 years. It's been more than 30 years.
That's important to hear. Thank you.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
This is the Wintrust Business Minute.
start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. Let's head over to the leaderboard, and Cranes is out with their annual Fast 50 list, detailing the fastest growing companies in the area thanks to the accounting firm Plant Moran. And the number one spot goes to LotLinks, which is an automotive digital marketing software company, selling directly through dealers and third-party companies like AutoTrader and Cars.com. Since 2012, LotLinks has grown to 85 total employees, but in the last 5 years, their growth rate has spiked over 67,000% thanks to their $37 million in revenue last year. That is bonkers! But I'm sure CEO Len Short did not get there without knowing the basics. And you can learn the basics too with Score Chicago, the small business resource for the Chicagoland area. Tomorrow, they're holding a seminar on email marketing for small businesses in Wakanda, Illinois, touching on everything from a straightforward email campaign to a newsletter. Keeping in touch with customers is vital for sustained success. The president of the online marketing company, JP NetQuest, is there to answer all your questions. So register today at chicago.score.com. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Back to Steve Bertrand and the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
It is now 12:52 on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks very much for tuning in, making this part of your daily routine. I certainly appreciate that. Randy Schaefer, well, for her, it's kind of a weekly routine. She's a digital editor for the Chicago Tribune, comes by on Monday afternoons. Unless you're going to tell me you listen every day, too, do you?
I do. I like to listen mostly to myself, but occasionally to you as well, Steve.
That's okay. That's fair.
Only joking.
I don't mind that at all. You can also listen. We podcast every show after the show is complete at WGNradio.com, and that's how I spend my evenings. I listen to myself.
That's how my mom spends her evening. She listens to my show every week.
Perfect.
Well, your show with me on it.
Okay, so you pulled a couple of articles. One was and I mentioned this earlier in the program, the average age that a kid gets involved in social media is what, 12 and a half?
12, yes.
And so what's interesting for me there, a couple of things. One is you're not supposed to sign up till you're 13 generally, right?
Right. For a lot of these sites, yeah, the terms and conditions state 13.
And it wasn't because they're worried about the kids?
No. It's because, well, a little bit, I guess.
Okay.
Let's talk about kids and social media. So a lot of parents have these genuine concerns about their kids being on social media and that it's bad, but as it turns out, it might not actually be that bad.
Well, so there are actually some studies that done that shows that kids who spend more time on social media sites than watching TV or video games like that, what, develop coping skills or end up better off?
Yeah, so for some reason, I couldn't exactly figure this out, but some sites lead to increased physical activity and less family conflict and fewer sleep problems. I think Instagram was one of those sites they said that, yeah, scrolling Instagram can actually help decrease sleep problems in kids.
But the reason, I want to get back to the age thing, that the scientists also look at the kids' brain development. And until 12... you don't have a lot of discerning ability, right? It's pretty concrete the way you think.
Yeah.
And then once you get older, it becomes a little more abstract. So, I mean, I would imagine if you don't have the ability to recognize things as a joke, maybe, or
sarcasm, Russian bots,
right, that some of that could be tough.
Right, exactly.
As a young kid. And the other thing is that the social media sites are all about selling data.
Yeah.
And you can't sell data for people under 13 years old.
Exactly, yeah. And not only that, but there's not really a lot of data on people under 13 years old. I mean, you don't really have your own credit card. You're not going to be going for those Facebook targeted ads or anything.
All right. So the advice to young parents is?
Always watch what your kids are doing. And that's, I feel, applicable advice for any parenting situation. Just keep an eye on your kids and make sure that you know what sites they're visiting, who they're friends with, and what they're doing.
And sign them up for Snapchat.
Are you on the Snapchat kick now,
no,
Steve?
No, not really. I'm back to Instagram.
Okay.
I've given up Snapchat altogether.
I feel like a lot of people have because Instagram has become kind of a Snapchat clone these days.
A story in Adweek that you pulled is good news for me. And you know what? If you look at what WGN Radio is doing, you can understand that because we certainly are a radio station, but we are a radio station that stresses online content as well. Like I said, every program we have here is podcast. We have a huge array of podcasts available. And there was an opinion piece in Adweek that said audio is the future of social media. So what
you guys are the future.
I know. How about that? Back to the future again. But what he's really talking about, the beauty of audio and social media, is what makes radio beautiful now. It's an intimate sort of media. You can take it anywhere, and it's kind of passive.
Yeah, exactly. And that was the word he used, was passive, where you're not scrolling, you're not looking at things. You know, you can put on your headphones on the train and just completely zone out. And So this Adweek piece does say that maybe audio is the future of social
media. And you said Facebook is using more and more audio. Podcasting certainly is
SoundCloud is huge.
Exponentially. And so that's good news for people who do what we do.
Exactly.
Okay, one more. You pulled a story about what to do if you hate your significant other's social media presence.
Yes, this life hacker piece is one of my favorites. I have a friend, and her boyfriend is a huge car fanatic, and all he posts on his Instagram are photos of cars. And
it drives you crazy.
It drives her crazy. One of the biggest pieces of advice is to just kind of accept it. You know, it's social media. It's not the end of the world. He's not forcing you to be a car.
Right. And it's not like political or things like that.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
All right. Have you run into that in your own life ever?
Not really, no.
No?
No. I can't think of a time when I have.
Randy Schaefer, a digital editor for the Chicago Tribune. Thanks for coming by.
Of course. Thanks to you.